I'm Paul Kennedy, and this is Ideas. A deceptively simple brood combination of two plants from the wilds of the Amazon has generated a spiritual tourism industry, spawned a small handful of new religions, raised issues around the patenting of indigenous knowledge, and may just help unravel the mysteries of human consciousness.
Ayahuasca is the principle, the mother of all natural medicines.
Hey, a bloody huasca. It's so not a drug, it's a consciousness, it's a spirit, it's your lover.
Ayahuasca es la mejor psicóloga y la mejor psiquiatra.
Ayahuasca is the best psychologist and the best psychiatrist that there is. She can detect our lies.
La ayahuasca es una puerta.
Ayahuasca is a door, a gateway, which opens a spiritual path to humans. There are no known limitations to the knowledge and information contained in ayahuasca.
In part one of In Search of the Divine Vegetal, filmmaker Tom McKinnon and writer Leonard Clare Cunningham team up to take us into the heart of the Amazon. Their mission is to investigate and, if necessary, debunk the current fascination with an ancient potion called ayahuasca.
Tom, this is one of the more esoteric things that you've involved me in.
I don't doubt that, Len. When I got back from Peru, I was looking for a collaborator to help me on a project surveying the growing interest in shamanism and ayahuasca.
And I needed a cameraman for my investigative documentary on Aboriginal deaths in police custody. It was a good quid pro quo. I remember you were fascinated by what could be motivating people to travel to the Amazon and subject themselves to an experience that is definitely not a recreational drug trip.
Well, the body load on an ayahuasca journey can be really, really, really uncomfortable. You're more than likely to puke, and that could just be the lead up to a really emotional and overwhelming journey.
Kabbalah tutorial Wednesday, yoga Tuesday and Thursday. And now the ayahuasca retreat on the weekend? Do you think it can survive the New Age industry's reduction into another fad or pastime? We took their land, we take their resources, and so now we're coming back for their spiritual culture? Can we leave them anything?
That's why I figured this project would benefit from your work on colonialism and justice.
Yeah, except I'd never use those terms.
And there's a problem that we keep hitting, language. Anything dealing with spirit, gnosis, or even models of consciousness stumbles over language. Partly because spirit is the pre-verbal emotional reality that we inhabit. It is the animated world within and around us. We generate it, but it also impinges upon us from the outside. There are certain experiences or states that language simply cannot contain. So there is some element of truth in what you just said, but there's more to it than that. People have lost their faith in the key institutional structures of Western authority, the state, organized religion, the university. So yeah, I suspect that they are motivated by a sense of lack, and that's the same thing that drives consumerism and addiction.
But before we get into that, we should find out what ayahuasca is, at least in the biochemical sense.
And the person to best explain that is ethnopharmacologist Dr. Dennis McKenna. Dennis is one of the world's leading experts on psychoactive plants in general, and ayahuasca in particular.
Ayahuasca is, on the mechanistic level, on the nuts and bolts level, ayahuasca is a psychoactive beverage that is made from a combination of two plants. One contains a hallucinogen, DMT, dimethyltryptamine. DMT is an interesting compound. It is a hallucinogen, but it's not orally active. If it's ingested through the gut, there are enzymes in the gut called monoamine oxidases that will degrade it before it ever crosses the blood-brain barrier, before it's ever absorbed into the circulation. There is another plant. The other component of ayahuasca is a large jungle liana called Banisteriopsis caapi. And Banisteriopsis caapi contains another group of alkaloids called beta-carbolines. And it so happens that the beta-carbolines are very selective, very potent inhibitors of monoamine oxidase. So in making this combination of two plants, either one of which, if brewed by itself, would be inactive, the beta-carbolines protect the DMT from degradation in the gut and allow it to reach the brain in an intact form. We don't completely understand the functions of these compounds, but we're fairly sure that it has to do with the regulation of consciousness and with altered states such as dreams, such as meditative states, such as religious ecstasies, and this sort of thing. So by studying the chemistry of these plant preparations, this plant preparation, ayahuasca, and how it works in the brain, we can also understand some very basic things about our own neurochemistry and how our neurochemistry underlies what we have chosen to call conscious experience.
I honestly don't believe that science can ever adequately capture consciousness.
But I think you could describe what the Amazonian shaman are doing as a mind technology. Techniques of ecstasy is what Mircea Eliade called it.
So in the context of Amazonian shamanism, ayahuasca is at the center, really, of a whole pharmacopoeia of plant medicines. Shamans are generally aware of the properties and uses of, a couple of hundred different types of medicinal plants. Interestingly enough, they often learn about the properties of these plants by putting them into ayahuasca, small amounts of a plant that they may wish to understand can be mixed with ayahuasca, and in the experience, ayahuasca will tell them what the plant is good for and how it should be used and how it should be prepared.
It is amazing that Amazonian shaman came across this biochemically unique combination of two plants in one of the world's most biodiverse places.
I've heard that before and it bothers me a bit. Human beings are ingenious and experimental. Look at all the things we've discovered in the West, often by accident or through dreams. Why wouldn't people in the Amazon discover things in the same way? The people in the Amazon have been working with ayahuasca and other plant remedies for millennia, and in ways that we're just starting to comprehend.
But to really understand ayahuasca, you have to go to Iquitos, Peru, a fascinating place. Imagine 400,000 people in the middle of the jungle with no road access. It was established during the rubber boom, so it is part of gruesome and bloody colonial history.
And today, it's the meeting place for the International Cyber Tribe of Ayahuasca Aficionados. We hear from Norma Pandura on the role that ayahuasca continues to play in the indigenous communities of South America. Yasmin Grant provides the translation at the second annual Amazonian Shamanism Conference.
La selva encierra un mundo de misterios por descubrir. Por eso los grandes estudiosos jamás querrán morir sin conocer su magia.
The jungle holds much magic and is the source of much mystery, and many who have studied her arts have left this life without having completely understood or mastered all of her levels of intricacy. In the immensity and the gift that is the knowledge held by the jungle, the scientists will always be her children.
¿Quién más que ellos alcanzaron los secretos del aire, del agua, de la tierra, de las plantas, de los árboles y de la fauna?
The secrets which ours to discover are those of the earth, the air, the soil, the water, the plants, and the animals that reside there. Those of us who study these medicinal plants, we women are known as healers, doctors, and also as shamanesses. We spend years in studying the therapeutic properties of even just one soul plant and the gifts of healing that they provide.
Sadly, Norma passed away earlier this year. For 40 years, Norma treated her community and offered women a safe place to explore ayahuasca. She will be sorely missed. In their world, Shaman like Norma are called curanderos or vegetalistas. They are the doctors and psychologists in their communities. They're a living library of generations of accrued oral knowledge. To them, the natural world is sacred and animated with an intelligence that is accessible through the use of ayahuasca. The therapeutic use of ayahuasca is no longer limited to indigenous communities. Jacques Mabit is a Western-trained doctor. He uses ayahuasca and traditional healing methods in combination with modern medical techniques to treat people for addiction. We spoke to Jacques at Takawasi Center in Tarapoto, Peru.
Yo soy médico, formado en forma convencional en Francia.
I am a medical doctor. I was trained in France and originally came to Peru on an exchange in which my job was to provide services to people living in areas with very few medical resources. The local practitioners used traditional medicine and consisted of curanderos, midwives, and so forth. Modern medicine was in short supply and the population was very poor. During the course of this first exchange, I realized that traditional healing modalities were often more effective than conventional treatments and more economical and successful as well. It was a surprise to me to learn about how traditional healers have acquired their art. As opposed to going to schools, they learn through dreams, meteorological phenomena, intuition, etc. These methods defied the rational but were effective nonetheless. This interested me because I was less concerned about how their medicine worked than the fact that it really did work. I learned that their methodology reflected a cosmology which was coherent and internally consistent. When curanderos would talk about ayahuasca and how it worked, they explained it according to their cultural interpretations, which I had always assumed to be metaphors. Suddenly, I realized that these were not metaphors at all. It was reality, a reality which pertained to wholly other dimensions.
Desde siglos atrás, nuestros ancestros, por qué no decir nuestras comunidades, se han visto en la imperiosa necesidad de buscar la cura en las medicinas tradicionales.
Many centuries ago, our ancestors recognized the importance of seeking cures for illness through the method that is now known as traditional medicine. Every plant contains its own spirit, its own mother, its own particular medicine, and its own mind. And this is what enables plants to communicate and transmit to us their healing powers. By communing with the master plants, we are able to recognize and diagnose thousands of different types of illness.
La ayahuasca es la sanadora y la chacruna la visionaria.
The ayahuasca is the healer, the chacruna the visionary.
La ayahuasca es la mejor psicóloga y la mejor psiquiatra.
Ayahuasca is the best psychologist and the best psychiatrist that there is.
Es la detectora de nuestras mentiras.
She can detect our lies.
Al sacerdote le puedes mentir cuando te confiesas, pero la ayahuasca te aflora todas tus mentiras.
You can lie and go to a priest and be pardoned and forgiven, but you can never pull that one over on ayahuasca.
You know, this sort of typifies the understanding of the medicinal properties of these plants. They don't really have a Western perspective that involves pharmacology. You know, we understand that plants contain biologically active substances that are basically drugs, and they have an effect on our biochemistry. Their understanding of this is that plants are intelligent and that plants contain teachers, and that you have to, through the medium of ayahuasca, you can connect with the intelligence of the plants. And they, in fact, talk about plantus que enseñan, plants that teach. And that's their understanding, that ayahuasca is a pipeline to this cosmology of plant intelligence.
Aparte de la ayahuasca, que muchas plantas
There are many powerful plants besides ayahuasca. They are called the master plants because they teach us. And it's very interesting to observe the actions of different plants upon different aspects of the human psyche. There are plants which fortify one's sense of individual identity, plants which make one feel more grounded and connected to the earth, plants which raise one up to ethereal realms when one feels caught in the web of the mundane. There are plants which can help one to remember one's past, childhood traumas which the patient has blocked out, for instance. It's as though the patient has access to a panel of specialists in psychology and can consult with them at will.
If you ask a curandero like Norma how she knows what plant to use, she'll tell you that ayahuasca told her. Among those who have come to appreciate that this isn't a vague metaphor is Rosa Nakazawa, co-founder of the Takawasi Center with Jacques Mabit. Part of her training as a doctor required that she spend a year in remote areas of Peru developing medical services. She came to help and stayed to learn. As she explains, the curandero isn't just the equivalent of a pharmacist dispensing medicinal plants. It's part of a highly developed ritual and practice that often incorporates other religious imagery.
Y en el momento de este combate espiritual, el curandero está luchando contra las fuerzas del mal.
An ayahuasca session is considered to be a type of spiritual battle in which the curandero must grapple with the forces of evil which represent the illness of the patient. In this battle, the curandero will call upon all the protection he or she can muster, and religion in this setting represents one of the principal protections there is. Curanderos incorporate all manner of modern elements into their chanting and healing, such as the image of the combustion of gasoline. I once heard an Ikero talk about a helicopter of all things. What these curanderos take from such elements is their essence, what lies at their source. They are looking for the spark which will ignite the fire, which will burn out all impurities, and this can take many forms. At its most basic level, ayahuasca is a plant which brings reconciliation. Reconciliation within oneself, with one's environs, and also transcendentally. As a result, patients can regain their enthusiasm for life.
The key to learning the art of curanderismo, like any other art, is through practice. It's the same as if you had an interest in music, for example. You'll only learn through playing, through practice. A lot of curanderos also got their start by becoming acquainted with plant medicines through their own illnesses of initiation. In curing themselves, they have to take plants, follow diets, etc. And in this way, they learn of the healing properties of those plants. Through dreams and contact with the invisible, they open a channel to the spirit world through which they are instructed in vegetalismo.
El curandero va a actuar sobre el cuerpo del paciente, su cuerpo físico, su cuerpo energético.
For example, when curanderos perform sopladas, or ritual cleansings, what they are doing is creating a bridge from their body to the patient, a connection which serves to harmonize all the energetic threads of the patient. Tobacco is the principal vehicle for this. In this way of working, curanderos don't just provide a remedy for the patient, but rather use their own body and their own energy to reconstitute that patient and absorb or assimilate into their own body any negative vibrations which may be present. They must then metabolize or integrate these vibrations and learn to dispose of them through the constant purification of their own being on all levels. This is what makes curanderismo such challenging work. So when it comes to understanding traditional medicine, the first thing Westerners should know is that the fundamental vehicle of treatment is the body, the patients, and the curanderos, the latter of which serves as the primary therapeutic instrument. This is distinct from some Western methodologies or approaches, which stress psychotherapy and conversational techniques, such as analysis, dialogue, and counseling. This is all fine, but it is insufficient. The major shifts occur on other levels of awareness.
Tom, I have to admit to getting lost when Jacques talks about things like the body of the curandero being the principal instrument of therapy. You're actually going to have to help me here.
Well, isn't that foreign of a concept? Haven't you ever woken up and just been seized by how amazing the world is? It's that lived or felt level of our existence. We talk about the vibe that we get from people or from situations. We go with our gut instincts, or we follow our hearts. We get stuck in the doldrums, low spirits. I think that's what Jock is talking about. It's all about the energetic flow. I mean, we get inspired, that is, energized from something outside of herself. Or we are enthusiastic, which literally means to be inspired by spirit. So even in the West, we have an immediate and palpable sense of this. Martin Prechtel says that shaman are trying to put right the effects of normal human stupidity and repair the relationships with the invisible sources of life. He says that if this world were a tree, the other world would be its roots, the part of the plant that you can't see, but the part that puts the sap into the tree's veins.
Apologies in Havana, Tom, but it does smell like New Age spirit.
Except that it's centuries old, Len. And it's best explained by the people who are maintaining these traditions. Here is Elias Mamalacta, a Napo Runa shaman from Ecuador, and Donnie Quatrina from Iquitos, another of the few traditional female shaman.
We paint ourselves, we observe silence, we work as a unit, and if there is to be a ceremony, we fast beforehand. As our spiritual laws say, without transgression, without exploitation, one may heal the sick through the power of natural medicine.
Puede trabajar con pocas personas, no mucho. Máximo cinco personas para poder curar.
It's preferable to work with fewer people in a ceremony to a maximum of five in order really to heal people effectively.
Y por eso hay que esa ley hay que aplicar.
The shaman needs to be in contact with the person being worked on, in contact with their spirit. When there are a lot of people, optimal healing does not take place, and this does not sit well with Mother Ayahuasca. There are two classes of
shamans.
In one class, you have those who since childhood have practiced fasting, isolation, celibacy, and following a specialized diet. They've gone into the jungle with dad, they've learned the secrets. What is required in learning shamanism is to fulfill the requirements, the first being to abstain from salt, onion, chili, and sex while engaged in the process. The study of shamanism is the same as in any other field. If you get poor grades, that means you didn't meet the requirements. So a person with low grades becomes a brujo. The term brujo refers to those who are unsuccessful in some aspects of their training. This person knows the procedure, but isn't capable of curing well.
No cura bien. Esa persona solamente sirve para dañar, para molestar a la gente y robar.
These people tend to be mean-spirited, concerned primarily with the financial gain which comes from taking advantage of people.
Y entonces los peligros aquí de la ayahuasca es uno.
So the dangers then are, first, that sometimes curanderos hold themselves out as being shamans when really they don't have the background. They're simply purveyors of ayahuasca. But one who has been properly trained and prepared will be able to open the doorway to much knowledge to the apprentice because of the true spiritual contact that they have. Here in Peru, there are many shamans. One may think that they are all alike, and due to, say, a bad experience, conclude that they are all brujos, that they cheat, lie, try to harm, that ayah is a drug, etc. This is why it is so important, really, to know, before you drink, whom you are drinking with. The teacher has a great responsibility in this way, to inform about the effects of the plants. For example, the plant is jealous, and if you don't conduct yourself properly, the plant can punish you. That is why there are many rules around the taking of ayah, which a good teacher should inform you about, such as abstaining from sex and alcohol, for example.
Sana, limpio en cuerpo y alma.
A good shaman is somebody balanced, healthy, and in integrity in terms of his or her heart and soul.
Sufre y siente el dolor ajeno.
This person is able to feel suffering and suffer along with those who are suffering.
Jamás abusa en seducir para sexo a sus pacientes.
A good shaman never attempts to seduce his or her patients.
Ni con una mirada maliciosa.
or would never give the evil eye to anybody.
También él es de carne y hueso, con sentimientos espirituales.
Still, this person is of flesh and blood, and also of feeling made. This is a person, a human being, and not a saint. This person enjoys family life and having friends, and in appropriate occasions will even have a drink and dance.
Don Juan Tangoa Payama would agree with Norma. He is a mestizo shaman who has been studying Amazonian plants for the past 40 years. Juan is among the shamans who have embraced the glowing global interest in ayahuasca and has taken on a Western apprentice, Carlos Tanner. Carlos provides the translation.
You know, if you want to go to a party, you want to do some drugs, you want to have sex and listen to rock and roll and dance, it's fine before the ceremony. But when you drink ayahuasca and you clean yourself, then it's very, very important that you follow the diet. And the diet includes abstinence and includes not using drugs. So there is a time and a place to have sex and to use drugs and to listen to rock and roll. But it is not in conjunction with the healing that takes place with ayahuasca. It's against the healing of ayahuasca. And the idea being that ayahuasca purifies the body. And after you drink ayahuasca, you've reached a level of purity that you could not have reached without it. So you want to maintain that purity as best you can, which is why the diet is so important, because it maintains the cleanliness of your body. And abstinence from sex is another way to maintain the purity of your body. I think that an exception could be if you have 100% love in your relationship, but how many of us can say that we have 100% love when we're having sex? There's an opportunity to have negative energy because of the sexual act. And in a purified body, that negative energy could manifest itself into an illness.
Punarasikimanta kani kani, punarasikimanta kani kani, punarasikimanta kani kani kani.
You're listening to Ideas on CBC Radio 1, in North America on Sirius Satellite Radio 137, and around the world on cbc.ca. I'm Paul Kennedy. Broadcasters Tom McKinnon and Leonard Clare Cunningham take us on an adventure in ideas as they journey from Canada to the jungles of the Amazon and back in episode one of In Search of the Divine Vegetal.
The world that the Curandero inhabited is disappearing. At the same time, the aging Curanderos are dying without having passed on their traditional knowledge. Carlos Tanner has been training under Juan for the past 4 years and is one of the growing number of Westerners who have moved to South America to undergo an apprenticeship in traditional Amazonian shamanism.
I guess my interest in shamanism came from using other plant medicines and feeling that there was more to them than simply recreational use, and began to investigate the cultures that use these sacred plants that we recreationally used in the United States, and found that there was a culture within each plant that highly regarded the plant from its medicinal value. And I began to explore other medicinal plants, and when you get involved with medicinal plants, you soon realize that ayahuasca is considered the ruler of all the medicinal plants, the ruler of the spiritual dimension. So I became very interested in wanting to experience what it was like to be under the influence of ayahuasca. I am aspiring to continue the heritage and lineage of Curanderismo, and I like to think of a metaphor to describe it, which is of a tree that was planted long, long, long ago, before there was history, before there was written language. And that tree was the tree of plant spirit medicine, the tree of ayahuasca. And that tree has grown for ages into the widest, most solid tree. But because of the times, because of the events taking place, that tree is now in danger of dying. And our solution is to plant a new tree at the base of that tree and have the new tree grow under the protection of the old tree until it's strong enough to hold the old tree up. So that, to me, is what I'm part of, the new tree. And there will be a new lineage and a new heritage and a new tradition of shamanism, but we could not do it without the old tree. We would never survive. Our roots would never make it into the ground, and we would never break through the canopy. So it's very important that everyone find a teacher so that we can learn properly the arts, because this is something that's been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. To presume that we could learn something in a single lifetime would be silly.
The rubber boom brought the largely Roman Catholic rubber tappers into direct contact with the Amazonian Indians' ritual usage of ayahuasca. Out of this grew a number of what are called syncretic churches. Members are now active in Spain, Holland, England, Portugal, Japan, the United States, and now Canada. In 1993, a biomedical investigation of long-term drinkers of Hosca, the Portuguese word for ayahuasca, was undertaken. Brazil's União do Vegetal, where ayahuasca is a central sacrament, invited Dennis McKenna, Dr. Charles Grobe, and Jace Calloway to undertake one of the first serious scientific investigations into the effects of ayahuasca, known as the Hosca Project.
One of the things that you can't help but notice if you hang out with these guys is that, you know, they're in really good shape. Many of them, most of them, if they practice seriously, they're in great shape, even though many of them are well into their 70s, 80s, sometimes even 90s, but they're still vigorous, they're mentally clear, they're strong as oxes. You know, they'll do ceremonies all night till 3 or 4 in the morning, and they'll get up at 6 and they'll chop trees all day, and, you know, and then they'll do more ceremonies. So we were impressed by this. So we thought, well, you know, again, in the typical, you know, reductionist response of scientists, we thought, gee, wouldn't it be interesting to find out what about their physiology, or is there anything special about these people neurologically or any other way that contributes to this good health? So we came back with the idea that we should do a biomedical study.
So what did they find out?
From the physiological studies that we did, we found that it was not toxic. There was no sign of short or long-term toxicity. No sign of neurotoxicity or anything like that. Interestingly, what we did find on the physiological level that was unexpected, we found that it apparently triggered a long-term change in the density of serotonin transporters. And I guess you could say it appeared to have the effect of a long-term antidepressant effect is, I guess, the simplest way to put it. The results of the behavioral studies that we did and the psychological screening that we did, we showed that regular drinkers of ayahuasca compared to controls showed no sign of any cognitive deficits or memory deficits or lack of verbal skills or ability. In fact, the drinkers in our study group scored slightly higher, statistically significantly higher, than a comparable group of non-drinkers. So in terms of mental functions and everyday cognitive functions, they're fine. In fact, you know, they're a little better than normal. The most significant finding was that it appears to, within the right context, within the context of religious use and ceremonial use within the UDV, and we can't really say much beyond that, but it actually has a positive effect on behavior in the sense that it leads people to change their lives and stop drinking, for example, or stop taking drugs, or stop engaging in violence. It generally tends to lead people or help people who have behavioral dysfunctions, whatever it might be, to turn their lives around. And they can make it stick. And a lot of that, I know, it's not just the effect of the tea, of the drug, but it's the context in which it's used. But that, what that tells you is that ayahuasca can have long-term psychotherapeutic effects as long as that's reinforced by the context, the environment, other forms of support.
I can just imagine a bunch of shamans standing around going, wow, took you 500 years to figure this out.
And without money, it'll take us another 500 years to figure out the rest.
So there were a few things that we didn't look at. One was the effect on the immune system, which I have an intuition, I have a strong feeling that ayahuasca will turn out to be a strong immune stimulant, and that may explain much of its curative effects. And indeed, much of shamanic curing in total, much of shamanic curing may be based on an ability to potentiate the immune system. We know that there's an intimate relationship between the mind and the immune system, and depressed people have compromised immune systems, or they're much more vulnerable to attack on the immune system. This may reverse that. So that's one of the things we need to look at. Another major omission that we didn't get around to was I would like to look at its effect on oxytocin. Since we did the study, a lot of data has come up showing that oxytocin has a lot to do with bonding, it's the hormone that's induced after birth, and it facilitates bonding between mother and baby, but it also facilitates bonding between people.
Nosotros somos espíritus encarnados en cuerpo.
We humans, like plants, are spirits in physical form. But whereas plants have a collective spirituality, for example, there is not a distinct ayahuasca spirit residing in each ayahuasca plant, there is only one. Humans, by contrast, have an individuated one. Not only that, but not all spirits incarnate. Some entities exist purely as spirit. These can be called demons, angels, genies, and so forth, and what is being referred to is beings which are discrete entities without physical reality. What is most troublesome for Westerners to accept is something such as the non-physical realm, which cannot be explained rationally. But it's really not as though we're discovering new realities and dimensions here. These have always existed. It's just that we've never realized it before. In fact, in the West, there are lots of things which we don't know have physical reality, but which we nonetheless know to exist. Death, for instance. What we as Westerners in this field must do is simply remember these realities and remember that it is our own limitations which cause us to doubt the existence of anything outside of the material world.
Let me ask you, Len, do you have any trouble accepting what Jacques is saying here?
No. In fact, he's far from the first person to come into contact with these people and believe that what they're describing is very real. For the priests who accompanied the Spanish soldiers in their conquest in the New World, it simply proved that the shaman and his followers were in league with the devil. And as long as the inhabitants of a land were heathens or infidels, the church could sanction the slaughter in the name of God.
Right. And historically, the church actively suppressed anything to do with earth or goddess-based spirituality. I'm thinking of Christian precursors like the Gnostic sects, burning of witches at the stake, who for the most part were midwives or herbalists. Any connection to the spiritual that was not mediated by the authority of the church.
Fortunately, the Enlightenment's faith in science, reason, and order supplanted this religious worldview.
So then the shaman and his community were considered savages, and their worldview became just primitive superstition.
But now science is supplying some vindication. Here, Dennis gives us a biochemical explanation for plant communication.
Plants communicate in their environment through chemistry. That's the reason that plants have this incredible capacity to make, this vast diversity of molecular structures. I mean, some of the functions are quite simple, like their repellents or their defensive mechanisms, You know, they're a signal to animals, don't eat me. You know, sometimes they're a signal to animals, please eat me. Most of these plant chemicals, these so-called allelochemicals, serve a function in the environment of integrating the plant into its environment. They are messenger molecules. The language of plants is a molecular language, and they use it to communicate with other plants and with bacteria and fungi in the soil and insect pollinators and things that might eat them, like herbivores, and of course that includes us. So at every level that the ecology, any ecosystem, is delicately regulated through these plant chemical messengers. Plants have substituted biosynthesis for behavior. And it's not my phrase. It's actually a famous botanist, Tony Swain, came up with that. But I think what he's trying to say is that, you know, plants appear not to do much. You know, they just kind of sit there. We're animals and we express ourselves in the environment through behavior. Plants are not so out there. They work on a more subtle level through releasing these things into the soil, into the air. So we're, you know, though most of the time we're not aware of it, but, we, you know, in nature we're immersed in this chemical ecology that the plants more or less are keeping everything working, keeping the balance going. Without plants, there wouldn't be anything. Everything else on Earth that's not photosynthetic is basically a parasite on plants. You know, we can't make our own food. So we have to get our food either directly from plants or indirectly by eating animals that have eaten plants, but the connection is still there. So that's how plants are power brokers. They basically harness the energy of the sun and bring it into the biosphere and make the biosphere sustainable by this process of photosynthesis.
Las plantas que utilizamos no las utilizamos simplemente como un soporte molecular farmacológico.
Western science is well aware that many of its most potent pharmaceutical preparations are derived from plants and that there are countless plant medicines still to be uncovered. But I feel it's important to point out at this stage that we do not view plants simply as phytopharmacological vessels. We view them as multifaceted beings, as an energetic conglomeration much like humans. When we activate plants' energetic fields through deliberate manipulations, we perform what in Western parlance is known as ritual. Well, what ritual does is to give form to a symbolic system whose function is to provide a basis for the formation of consciousness and a framework for understanding and integrating one's experiences. It is a language. It's also a bridge between this palpable world and the world of the invisible.
Y la ayahuasca, que es la plata principal de autoconocimiento, que va a permitir a la persona hacer.
The principal function of ayahuasca is to promote self-awareness. This she accomplishes by causing patients to become introspective about their lives and by enabling them to see themselves from various perspectives simultaneously and feel all the feelings that go along with this. It is the realm of sentiment, which is essentially what spirituality is, which lies at the heart of the matter and is what makes all illnesses essentially spiritual in nature. The fundamental questions of humanity, what is the meaning of life and where are we going? These are the questions patients must answer for themselves as they pursue the road to recovery.
Well, this reminds me of nothing so much as the basic Gnostic myth. There's many variations on the Gnostic story. There's as many variations as there were Gnostic sects, and there were many Gnostic sects. These were the precursors of Christianity, and they were suppressed by the early church. But the story that is consistent across them goes something like this. In the beginning, there was the absolute, absolute mind. And absolute mind looked out over the deep waters, as they put it, and projected into the deep waters a reflection of itself. And that reflection became the first principle, a feminine principle, which they called Sophia, or wisdom. And Sophia, because she had the divine plan in her, and because she hadn't realized that whatever she thought would become manifest, has an idea emulating the actions of the Absolute. And that idea immediately becomes manifest as a being. And that being they called Ildabaoth. And Ildabaoth is the god of the Old Testament. And he's an imperfect god. He's a jealous god. He's an egotistical god. And he's a soulless god. Being soulless means that he has no idea, no concept, no sense of the absolute as a principle above him. He feels that he is the god. And so he immediately, because he has a divine plan in him as well, starts to manifest universes. And he's also barely aware of his mother, Sophia. And at the same time, as a result of this action, Sophia has created a rift in the Pleroma, and a portion of the divine light has fractured out into the realm of Ildabaoth, into the realm of matter. And Sophia herself falls into the realm of matter and becomes the earth. Well, she realizes immediately that she's made a mistake, and she confers with the Absolute. And what they do is they take a portion of Sophia, a portion of the earth, and they create what they call the Adamus, the astral man. The role of the astral man will be to collect the fractured light of divinity that has fallen into the realm of matter and bring it back to the Absolute. But because it's the realm of matter, and that's the realm of Ildabaoth, they need Ildabaoth to blow life into it. And this he does. But immediately that he does it, he realizes that he's created something greater than himself. And so he wraps it in time and matter to keep it from realizing its mission. So they confer again. And between Sophia and the Absolute, they produce the Christos, Christ. The role of Christ is to illuminate the path for the Adamus out of the labyrinth of time and matter so that it can complete its divine mission of bringing the fractured light of the divine back to the Absolute. So in this story, the snake in the Garden of Eden, rather than being Satan, is actually a manifestation of the Christos in concert with Sophia. And in our story, then, you could say that ayahuasca is a manifestation of the tree of knowledge.
And you know, you do get this feeling with ayahuasca. I mean, it very much presents itself on a personal level. You can get on your Western rationalistic high horse and dismiss that and say, well, obviously it's a part of your brain that's, you know, taken on this role, and it's not really ayahuasca that's intelligence, it's just some part of your own intelligence that's split off and is presenting itself as something autonomous. But you definitely have the experience of being talked to, or not talked to so much, because it doesn't present itself that way, I guess telepathically communicated with by a being that is much older than you are, much wiser than you are, compassionate, and that has really only your best interests at heart. When you get to the point where you feel like you really don't know anything, then you're open. You've created an opportunity to start learning stuff. And I think that's what ayahuasca does. It shows you, you know, how little you know and how much there is to know. And it does it in a very loving way, at least for me.
With humility, I ask only this of my fellow curanderos, that on the day of my death, the shakapas dance to the whistles and chants of the caros. My daughter, my mother, from the heavens hear me. May you meet me in this great encounter, where we shall be embraced by the vine ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is wisdom, guardian of that which is known and unknown, of that which is human and that which is real. With my eyes cast heavenward, I invite you to enter into this realm of visions and feelings, colors and sensations. And let us listen with our souls and with our hearts to the voice of ayahuasca.
You've been listening to part one of In Search of the Divine Vegetal, prepared and presented by Leonard Clare Cunningham and Tom McKinnon. Special thanks to Yasmin Grant for her translations. And thanks also to CBC staff Paul Grant, Philip Ditchburn, and Heather Brown for their voices. Next week in part two, we'll get as close as the radio can get to taking ayahuasca. And we'll ask the question whether a genuine search for spiritual enlightenment among indigenous peoples can survive the credit card culture of the first world. The producer of In Search of the Divine Vegetal in Vancouver was Kathleen Flaherty, with technical assistance from Chris Cutress. If you'd like an audio copy of this or any other ideas program, if you want to know what's coming up on the show, or if you'd like to learn more about CBC Radio podcasting, please go to our website at cbc.ca/ideas. The executive producer of Ideas is Bernie Lucht, and I'm Paul Kennedy. Please stay tuned for the hourly news.
Karaika, Arahi, Arahi, Sati, Sati.